Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the HER podcast. Hey, welcome to our show in episode 480, as we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today her flourishing. Flourishing, you're going to flourish. Okay, now this is going to be a very special show, and I know it's really going to hit you in all the right places. Before we begin, please know that this episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, vitamins, minerals, and herbs, all rooted in nature, for crying out loud. They've got a special gift for women, and that's the new award-winning HER Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years through PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, a whole McGillicuddy. This is an integrative, holistic approach to having a woman's back throughout her entire hormonal life journey. To learn more about her life stages, run on over to your local health food store. You could go to Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, and if you check it out at solaray.com, that's S-O-L-A-R-A-Y.com, use promo code HER20 for 20% off. You'll be glad you did. And here's your first reminder to click on iTunes to rate and review the show when we're done, because the HER podcast sits around just waiting for your feedback. We love to hear from our beloved audience community. So I'll be reminding you again later on. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about HER.
So I'm just kind of like listening to one of my favorite shows on NPR, and oh my gosh, I heard a voice. And the voice is not only smart, but was talking about something that I have always really, quite frankly, wondered about, and that's this word. And when I say it out there, think to yourself, what does that really mean to you? The word is languishing. What is languishing? Good grief. Someone wrote a whole book about it. And that's Dr. Corey Keyes. Now, Dr. Keyes is a professor emeritus of sociology at Emory University, where he held the Winship Distinguished Research Professorship. He was a member of the prestigious International MacArthur Foundation Research Network on Successful Midlife Development and Aging. And here's the book. It just came out. Oh my gosh. Someone finally wrote about it. And more importantly, a scholar. The name of the book is Languishing: How to Feel Alive Again in a World That Wears Us Down. Corey, welcome to the HER podcast.
Thank you for having me, Pam.
Oh, there's that voice again. It's just this voice that says, I'm going to just calm you all down and give you some really good information, and then God bless. You know, it's just, you're on your own. So the first thing I ask most of my authors, being an author myself, I've been asked this so many times, why did you write this book? What was it about languishing?
In one sense, I had to write it. I had to write this story because I experienced languishing very early in life. And to put it scientifically, it scared the hell out of me. I begin my book with that story. At the age of 12, I was adopted by my paternal grandparents, my Nana and Papa Keys. And suddenly I was transplanted into a home where I felt safe, loved, cared for, out of a very, very violent and abusive situation. And suddenly, all those negative things that have to do with childhood trauma were gone. The negative was gone. And the conditions for flourishing were there, but I didn't feel it right away. So the absence of the negative did not mean suddenly I felt inside of me really good. By the way, I went from a delinquent to an honor roll student, literally. Overnight. And that's what transplanting people in the right conditions means. But there I was. I was very busy, and I'd come to the end of the day, Pam, and suddenly I sort of got quiet. The emptiness inside of me appeared kind of like a fog just creeping in from behind me without me knowing it's there. And before I knew it, I was engulfed in this sense of emptiness and feeling like I was dead inside. I was listening to what would become my favorite musical artist, Jackson Browne. I tuned into the radio it was the King Biscuit Flower Hour. And it was right after he released his live album, hugely successful, called Running on Empty. And he played his title song. And the lyrics stopped me in my tracks. I said, that's me. With Jackson Browne and other musicians, I would later discover what they describe as going from one city to the next, letting your soul out and hoping something good comes in, feeling drained of color and empty and worn out. That was me. I was running on empty, going somewhere, trying to go somewhere, and I felt stuck. And I thought I was alone. And there I was, fast forward to, I was in my PhD program, and I knew I had to study this. I knew it. I had to figure out if it wasn't just me. When Jackson Browne, of course. So to end this story, to into your question, I embarked on a long research project to accumulate data to see whether this absence of good mental health, right? That's languishing. And flourishing is the presence of good mental health. Whether it was something worth giving to the public. And after a career of 25 years to almost 30 years of research, I built a body of science that said, it's time to tell the story. And that's why the book was written. And it was my journey to finding something better in life.
Interesting. And first of all, I always thank wonderful guests like yourself who are so forthcoming with, your own personal journey and how much that really affected what you studied, how you ultimately looked at this whole issue. It gives such a beautiful, personal, transparent, authentic context so that people listening to this can say, yeah, I identify totally. I've been there. Raise your hand out there in the Herb podcast land. The answer is, yeah, we've all been there. I dare say that everyone in their life has been sort of languishing. When I first heard that word, I would say, I would have a vision. And the vision, I don't know if this is correct, but it was like an anchorless boat getting kicked around by the waves. Without a center focus, you're really kind of unprotected and lost. I'm thinking of all the words that would go along with that. Does that make sense?
Yes. And you've queued up the story of Andrea, a friend of mine. She said, when I described she asked me what I was doing, and I was working on this book, and I said, I described to her languishing. She said, that's me. And she gave me this amazing description. I said, you have to put this in an email, send it to me. This has to be in the book. And here's how she described it. And she's a mother of two. Everything's going well externally. And she's successful by all measures externally. But here's how she described it. Languish feels like I'm on an airplane circling above the runway, but unable to land. It doesn't feel like I'm in any imminent danger. I'm strapped into my seat and generally fine. But there's a sense that I'm waiting for a resolution that is taking forever to come. Strangely, I'm not even sure what it is. Anxieties that were never there pop up. Languishing puts you squarely in the present and makes you aware of all that is going on around you, but it's not mindfulness. It's hypervigilance. And she goes on to talk about it, how this sense of feeling stuck in the air, circling, out of control, not knowing where you're going. I thought that was just an amazing description of what I think many people feel. Other people will describe it this way. There's a hunger. Now, you wrote a book about hunger, right? That physical stuff. You would be amazed, Pam, how many people use the word when they're languishing, that this, I'm hungry for something more to life. Hungry. They want to feed. They use the word soul a lot. Like, my soul is a dark pit, empty, and I'm trying to feed it, but nothing I do is making me feel any better. And so what I think about sometimes is like what Gabor Mate in his book used as the title for his book on trauma and addiction, The Realm of Hungry Ghosts. The Buddhist, I think languishing is like the realm of being a hungry ghost. You try to fill it and feed it, but nothing gets rid of that emptiness and that sense of hunger for something better.
Is this something innate in everybody to have this, as it were, languishing experience in life? Or based upon your research, are there people who are more apt to languish?
Oh boy. It's a very natural human reaction when you have gone through experiences that have either overwhelmed your ability to be present or had taken you offline from the things that make your life meaningful and taken you so far offline that the person you suddenly have become is something that you don't recognize anymore and you never wanted to be. There's something about languishing where you go through a period where something about the world takes something from you that you did that was good, that you wanted to keep, that was valuable, but you didn't say no to it. You kept saying yes to more. Let me do more. And then you stopped doing the things that fed meaning in life and your soul. So to feel empty, it's like an alarm, an existential alarm clock going off. It's saying, you have not been doing the things that keep you feeling alive and that make your life meaningful. But what happens is, just like the real alarm clock, we hit snooze a lot. And what we're doing in this world is saying yes to things that don't feed our soul. So we keep hitting the existential clock to this natural reaction of feeling empty and going on and doing the things that we know are taking us away from our loved ones, our friendships, our sense of playfulness and joy, and all those other good things that feed our soul.
I've got an interesting question, though. I'm sort of piling on this. You know, you mentioned the word meaning in life. And what strikes me, and again, I'm so fascinated with this issue. When people are tootling along in their life, and they seem to have meaning and purpose. So, you know, I mean, the meaning and purpose in the high school is to be cool and, you know, to kind of get through high school, maybe crush it in mathematics and aim for a great college somewhere or, you know, whatever you're going to do. And then you get to college and it's like, oh, you're just one little fish in a very, very, very large pond now. And perhaps you languish again because suddenly competition is much higher. Everything is ramped up and you may lose, to your point about something that you really love and you are holding on to. You may actually, when I say lose, you're transitioning from one level of meaning and purpose to another. But to find that meaning and purpose as you're transitioning, I would think that period of time involves languishing. It's like, you know, you're kind of going back and forth going, oh, I sure do miss high school. And wow, I was like, you know, a king or a queen there. And now I'm just like a little, you know, pawn in this big college thing. And I'm trying to find my footing and I'm a little lost. And then when you finish college, then what do? It's like, oh, what do I do? You know, like what's the career thing? What's that next? I'm indecisive. I'm not sure. What's my meaning and purpose? Where's the passion? So I'm wondering whether or not that's almost a necessary step between certain transitions in life.
Well, I think we want to distinguish goals from purpose in life, and then success versus significance. Success. What happens, I think, early in life is another wake-up call for many that we don't listen to. And the idea is that all these goals that we ascribe to that are sort of, they come in from the outside in, right? These are external paths to success. So there's nothing wrong with having these goals. Like, I want to do well in school. I want to get into college. I want to get a degree. I want to become a doctor, for instance. Now, the problem with believing your goal is your sense of purpose is they can be very self-focused, very egotistical. You can approach a goal where it's only about you and you becoming better than other people. Purpose in life starts with how can I help other people? And it's not about success, but it's about, well, how can I be not better than others, but how can I be better for other people in the world? And when your goal, right, when your goals merge with a sense of, also, I want to be doing something that helps others. And that's the first question I ask anyone. If you're searching for a purpose in life, you have to say yes to two things. One, do you want to help something or something in the world to alleviate some of their suffering and leave the world a better place? If you can't say yes to that, don't even bother with purpose in life. Leave it alone. And then if you say yes to that, well, do you have all the tools you need right now to get there? And a lot of young people don't. They've got to focus first on getting the skills and the degrees. And even once they get the degrees in your field and in mine, we have to apprentice for a long time to get even good enough at really helping people. So you have to have a long-term plan, and you have to transition between focusing only on success and goals to ultimately having what I talk about in the book, a plan for your purpose, which comes later, which is, now I have honed my craft enough that I can really help the world or other people and leave it a better place than I found it.
I love it. Well, you know, this leads right into flourishing. See, now that word. So you in the book, by the way, the book is absolutely fabulous. So in this one, you're talking about the five vitamins of flourishing. Let's hit it. Learn, creating stories of self-growth. Let's do it.
Well, the first vitamin, and again, all of this is based on definite scientific studies. And so there was this study that looked at a day in the life of flourishers. And it was longitudinal. And they found out that there were five activities that people who are flourishing do more regularly. And they don't do them every day, all five at once. But when they choose one, they do more of it. The first one you alluded to is they keep learning as they grow older. Now, why is that significant? Because we are a very age-segregated society, like much of the world. We put all our learning and growth at the beginning, and then we're supposed to just use it for the rest of our adult life, and then we're done. We don't prioritize learning something new on a daily or a weekly basis. Now, the other thing about learning something new is it can't be only because it's instrumental to your career success. It can be if it's about getting better at helping other people. But a lot of this benefits of learning when it comes to flourishing is about doing it only because you want to do it and get better at it. So during the pandemic, I heard about a lot of people taking up arts and music, instruments and various artistic pursuits. Now, they're not going to go become successful artists or stage musicians. Why did they do it? And why do people continue to do that throughout life? Because it brings them joy to see themselves growing. That's the first important vitamin. We're just like everything else planted in this universe. We need to grow it. Our form of photosynthesis is learning. Just like plants take in the sun and photosynthesize, we take in ideas and knowledge, and we're doing the equivalent of what plants do. That's how we begin to feel alive. We need to stop putting all our growth and learning at the beginning of life and continue throughout life and do it because we want to, not because we have to.
I love to be able to look at this. You know, I've in my own mind, it's like I'm taking a lifelong course called You 101. And then when I say that, I mean, just raise your hand. Go ahead, take a risk or two. You know, someone tells you to stand in front of an audience. You know, what's the worst that can happen? Come on now. That type of an attitude. And then, you know, listen, lessons are great. Some lessons show you're really not very good at that. And that's a very valuable lesson. It's like, we're not doing that one again. So either way, it's a win-win. I look at it as one win-win. And would you just park your ego at the door already? I mean, if you fall down, wipe your little behind off and stand up and grow a set. Okay, now, number two is connect, building warm and trusting relationships. Ooh, I like connect.
Yes. We're talking a lot about that in the world, right? Because the Surgeon General has taken on the task of loneliness. But, you know, I write about this in the book. Loneliness does not happen alone. And we'll get to that. But the point here is, when it comes to flourishing, there are three questions out of the 14 questions I use to diagnose it that get at the heart of how we need to prioritize connection. The first was the question of, do you have warm and trusting interpersonal relationships? And do you experience them on every day or almost every day? The second is, do you have a sense of belonging to a community? Do you experience that sense of belonging on a regular basis? And the third is, do the things you do on a daily basis matter or contribute things of worth and value to the world? And when you're deficient in those three things, I think that drives at the heart of feeling lonely. You don't belong anywhere, or you're a part of community where nobody welcomes you, he accepts you. The second is, you're doing all kinds of things of value, but nobody values it. And the third is, we have all kinds of connections, but we do them in such a way, remotely and distally, where you can't experience warmth and trust. That's why in-person contact is the key to the latter. The sense of warmth doesn't come remotely. We get some of that, what we're doing now, but we really, really get warmth, right? Just like rubbing your hands real hard when we're together and connecting meaningfully.
I had on my podcast just recently, Jeff Hall, who is the University of Kansas researcher who became famous for the 200 hours that it takes to develop a friend. He's the friendship guy, and his research is really centered around that. And I said, all right, 200 hours. How do you do that in a world where friendships in person are sometimes nuts? You can't do it because maybe one of your best friends moved to wherever. And now what are you left with? I mean, what's it like when you just, you resort to FaceTime, Zoom, you know, phone calls, whatever, and maybe you see each other once or twice a year. Does all that count? And thankfully, what he said was, it all counts. It all counts. But the best of all is any time you can actually spend in that person's company. So making it happen, it just means you're going to have to work harder to allow that. I mean, take that special trip to that state and then spend some time. Invite that person to come on down and stay with you. Do a vacation together. That's turning out to be a real go-getter for people who maybe are just not that close anymore. Many people move out of the country, and so that makes it even more challenging. So long as they go to a really cool country, then I'll visit. Just kidding. But I'm saying, it's like, what? Oh, Paris? Yeah, okay. Let me pack my bags right now and let me get this little show on the road. So I love what you've just said about connection and how incredibly important it is to be able to develop that warmth. I love it when you're rubbing your hands together, you know, for that whole essence of what warmth is really all about. And as we now know from medical studies that have been peer-reviewed and published, loneliness per se is worse than smoking 15 cigarettes a day. I mean, it's just, it's a horrible, horrible pro-inflammatory state and clearly associated with early death and morbidity. And Lord knows, grossly impaired mental health. So anything, you know, like get on out there and work it. Friends don't just like pop out of the air here. Come on now. 50% of that is you. And then just show up. And again, what's the worst that can happen? You went to a gathering and you didn't find anybody interesting. Okay, that's cool. But you went, you got up off your little behind and you went. And this is work. You know, you got to do that, especially in this crazy world we live in right now, you know, to be able to connect. Ooh, get your face out of that device and look at somebody, would you please? Now, the third vitamin, all right, so we have learn and connect. Just a little repeater here. There will be a test at the end. Number three is transcend, accepting the inevitable plot twists of life. Now, go for it. What did you mean by that?
Transcend. Because that chapter is all about religious and spiritual practices. And you do not have to be religious or affiliated with any religious faith or institution to engage in the benefits, nor do you have to be uniquely spiritual to benefit from spiritual practices. Myself, I'm a long-term Iyengar yoga practitioner, and I don't just do the poses. I study the philosophy, and that's the key as well. Because in the point of transcending is, in the way I describe religion and spirituality is, it's all about rehearsing. What you're doing when you're practicing religion and spirituality is rehearsing for what is going to happen out there, outside of your home or inside of your home, that you did not expect to happen, that wasn't invited, wasn't what you desired, it was undesirable, just the opposite. And so all this rehearsal is a preparation for you to respond in a way that you, when you're done, you will look back at and say, I am proud. I am proud that I responded not with revenge or retaliation. I took a breath and I said, what's done is done. Now, how can I not make this worse? And maybe how can I make this better? To me, the best and the heart of all religion and spiritual practices is about practice, practice, and practice. Just like a pianist cannot go out there and get on stage in front of a huge audience when he or she is suddenly nervous and overcome the fear and the emotions that would make them actually do really awful performance. But instead, they're so prepared because they rehearsed, and they transcend the negative emotions and create something beautiful that lasts, rather than a retaliatory, negative part of our human nature. So that's all I'll say.
I just love this. You know, when I saw that transcend was next up, as I was reading your book, it, needless to say, hit a real chord with me. I have, you know, been practicing transcendental meditation for quite a few years. I do yoga. I'm an athlete. So I just sort of incorporate it all into my athletic training, but I just found it to be an extraordinary experience, to say the least. And as a scientist, I've been following the science of meditation per se, but really looking closely at what the scientists with TM have been able to produce, showing greater blood flow in the prefrontal cortex of the brain in what we now call restful alertness. And that means that while you're not asleep, you're not, you know, staring at something, your eyes are closed, and you're in a transcendent state of restful alertness. And there are changes that actually take place in the brain when that occurs. So all of these practitioners, whether it's yoga or whatever, you know, are really in a state of transcendence. And I would say that prayer per se, whatever kind of prayer, yields transcendence in much the same way and applicable to applying calm and focus and the ability to be mindful of what's going on around you. So I look at everything as an integrative experience rather than, you know, like one thing or the other. It's just integrative, which makes a heck of a lot more sense to me. So kudos to you for really bringing up that transcendence.
The beautiful thing about this is we get so wrapped up in, we hear religion and spirituality and we go, I don't want to do that. Well, like I said, there's such a smorgasbord that our ancestors have given us. Choose something. Again, this is back to learning something new in the way you described it. Keep trying it out until you find something that connects with you, because we all need to be prepared, not hypervigilant, not disengaged, but just present when the world comes a knocking. Just like Rumi's poem, right? The guest house, and it will come. It will visit you, and you can reject it and make it worse, or you can welcome it in, just like Rumi says, because it's there to clear your house and prepare you and help you grow and get ready for the next, because that's life. You know, the hardest race or athletic activity we will ever engage in is life. Life requires preparedness, and if you're not prepared, it will overwhelm you.
There's no question about it, mentally and physically. You know, you want to, if you fall down at the age of 50 or 60, there's no front end loader there ready to pick your little behind up. You better have already done the work to have the muscles and the acumen to be able to get up on your own. If you fell down in a lonely place somewhere with no help. So mentally, it's the same thing. Do you want to mentally fall down and then just stay there paralyzed? Or do you have the tools to be able to really wrap your head around how to adapt and adjust and then move forward to progress? Because I'm all about that. So that moves us to the next vitamin. Help finding your purpose, even in the mundane. All right. Help us with this one. Help.
Well, that's the chapter where I do end up talking about purpose, but you don't even have to go to that level to really benefit from this vitamin. Because I learned very early on in my recovery and therapy when it came to mental illness that I had to start small. And I read about how my ego pushed back. My therapist said, we're going to do breath work, but we're going to do 1 minute a day. And I thought to myself, oh my God, what a waste of my time. 1 minute, it's not going to help me. But she persisted. And as I pushed back, she would push back to me. And my point in bringing that up is all you need to do is keep it local, because when it's local, it will stay focal. It will stay focused for you, because we get so confused at thinking, helping and purpose, it's got to solve a big worldwide problem. And if we can't solve the Middle East problem or the problem in Ukraine or something else, well, why even try? Well, that's not the point. None of us can do that. But we can help somebody in something in our community, in our neighborhood, on our block, or at work every day. Every day. That's where we need to begin to start, because there's... And volunteering, the research is unequivocal. Helping and volunteering on a regular basis gets us out of self, outside of our own problems, and caring about something and someone else. And when we act out of kindness and concern for the others, we come home and realize that we're better people than we could have ever imagined. Because who's the hardest on ourselves? Other people? No, we are. I would have no friends if I talked to them the way I talk internally to myself, is the mantra, right?
I know, trash talking, right? Is what I call it.
Yeah, it's trash.
How could you do that? Shoulda, coulda, woulda. I mean, you go right down a laundry list of all the bad boy things and bad girl things that we say to each other, and then it's like, whoa, that's like potty mouth to yourself. What are you doing?
And then we think we don't have nothing to give to the world. No, my grandmother and grandfather, who were very poor working class, did everything they could. They would give loaves of bread to all my friends to bring home to their families. I mean, all kinds of small acts. Anytime anyone came to my house, they were welcome for dinner, any of my friends. And if they couldn't stay for dinner, they brought cinnamon rolls, Parker House rolls, or freshly baked bread home. Everywhere I went, because we were raised in a retirement park, my grandparents had retired, I saw older people doing this on a regular basis, small, mundane things, out of kindness, helping each other. That gets at our tribal nature, by the way, our ancestry. 90% of it was in these tribes where we needed each other to get by, to just survive.
Well, this goes back to your whole issue of connecting. You want to find your tribe, and you could find your tribe by doing things that come naturally to you. Do you like to be of service? You got a tribe or two out there waiting for you. And it just goes like that. And at the same time, you're kind of accomplishing so many of the other vitamins, flourishing, because that also gives you a purpose. You know, you're being of service to other people and you're not expecting anything in return. You're doing it because it's the right thing to do. It makes you feel fantastic and you're really helping someone, which goes to the help vitamin at the same time. Now, the next vitamin is play, stepping out of time. Now, the minute I saw play, I said, okay, now we're talking. Because, you know, there's a whole science of play that those kids who don't play, who were put in pretty terrible situations without play, had fairly dire consequences with mental health. So I love the issue of play. So go for it.
In the same way that we're an age-segregated society when it comes to learning, we're age-segregated society when it comes to play. And play researchers, I have one thing to challenge you. Why do you focus on play only with children? Do we somehow think that we're supposed to stop playing when we become adults? Yeah, that's what we're led to believe, but we're not. We are meant to play throughout our life. I think that's a muscle that gets lost after we start to realize, well, I can't play with imaginary things. And I write about this New York Times op-ed of a mother who had a child at age 11 come crying to her mother and giving her her dolls. She said, I lost my imagination. These are not my friends anymore. And she was crying because those stuffed animals and dolls were real to her. They were real because she imagined they were real. And she played with them just like they were real people. And as soon as she said she lost the ability to imagine them as real, she lost her friends. Now, I think imagination is a muscle we need to use throughout adulthood. Well, how else do you ever imagine a better future for yourself without playing, without a sense that, you know, what could happen? What's the possibility here?
What I always recall is George Bernard Shaw's famous quote, "We don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing." I live by that. It gives me a chance to be as playful as humanly possible, which means I love to like do pranks and wild and crazy stuff, you know, and people expect that of me and have that little sense of humor and everything. Playful, being playful, just being playful. It's joyful. You know, you flourish when you play. I don't see anybody languishing when they play because, I mean, it's just pure awesome joy. So that vitamin really hits home in a big way. And then finally, you talk about how you build a community of flourishers. You know, I'm someone who believes, rightly or wrongly, but you are who you hang out with, right? And whoever your tribe is, you try desperately to find people who, I mean, they may have diverse opinions and they've got all kinds of beautiful layers of complexity, but at the end of the day, they're flourishers. They flourish in their own way. Now, maybe somebody likes to play golf, or I'm someone who could hike a mountain. I've done the Grand Canyon twice, rim to rim, other people would say, kill me first. So what makes me flourish is different than somebody else. But at the same time, I honor and respect the fact that people flourish in their own beautiful ways. They help connect. They do all of these vitamins, meaning and purpose in life, in their own extraordinarily wonderful way. That's why I love the way you frame this in your beautiful book, because it leaves so many opportunities and options. Make sense?
That's a key point when it comes to the measurement of languishing and flourishing. And we don't need to go over the 14 questions. But here, the sense here is there are 14 questions, and you need to be a minimum to be flourishing, a 7 out of the 14, every day or almost every day, with one of them coming from what I call emotional well-being. You have to feel happy, satisfied, or interested in life, but not without also functioning well with a sense of purpose, belonging, contribution, and growth, and all those other good things. But think about all of the amazing combinations that people can have. You don't flourish, we don't all flourish the same way, because you don't need to have all 14 every day and almost every day to be flourishing. And so it gets at the point you made just so beautifully, and is important for me to make sure your listeners understand, flourishing is not Superman or Superwoman. It's just 7 out of the 14 criteria at minimum to get there.
I love that. And that sense of flourishing, I still think, tell me if I'm wrong, but I still think that you could really find that the beauty of flourishing when you really do the work to understand meaning and purpose in life. I think meaning and purpose in life is so central to everything we're talking about. And I love the way you said that it's really important to look at practical elements of success. Oh, she got an A on that test, or she got that degree, versus significance in life. And to concentrate on really doing the work to know that this is a lifelong journey that is dynamic. It's constantly changing up. And that issue of transcendence, when life throws you those little curveballs, and not become paralyzed, but instead use the tools you have to be able to adapt, adjust, and move on. Learn, apply those learnings to your life, that type of thing. I just absolutely love this. You know, as we're wrapping this up, I want you to do one thing, and that is just gift the audience right now with just one simple little thing they could do right now, to be able to begin this journey of discovering their flourishing.
Well, let's begin where we ended when we talked about the vitamins. When we're talking about play, I spend a good bit of the chapter talking about leisure, because it seems more acceptable to adults to talk about play in the form of leisure. But you can also do play and start there. But here's the thing you have to overcome. One is the sense that we have commodified our time. Time is money. And so anyone who has that mindset, be honest with yourself, because you're going to see play and leisure as a waste of your time. So deal with those mindsets. Second is, it's very clear that if you're going to do leisure, the stuff that we're being fed is far more passive and unhelpful to our flourishing when it comes to leisure. It's the active leisure that's very critical to your flourishing. So the second condition that gets in our way is that we're fed our leisure by, like, a consumer. So our music, we consume our music. We don't make music. We consume and listen to people's poetry and stories rather than tell stories to each other like we used to. And we sit down and watch sporting events rather than get off the couch and go out and do our own version of biking, hiking. Right. It's unbelievable how much, if you look just two generations ago, they had to create their leisure.
So it's all being active instead of passive.
Yes, we've become consumers when it comes to leisure.
If that's the message that is one of the most important messages of the entire book. You know, this has just been an incredible interview. I just love it. You and I could talk forever, but then my producers would probably throw something at me and say, stop that sulliness, Dr. Peak. Good grief. Listen, I want to thank you so much for this absolutely marvelous show, Dr. Corey Keeves, the author of a book that is absolutely amazing, and that is Languishing, How to Feel Alive Again in a World That Wears Us Down. Boy, I can't even tell you the timeliness of this book. I mean, you've kind of put two and two together in today's crazy world. So thank you so much, Corey, for being on our podcast.
You're so welcome, and thank you for having me.
All right, and here's another shout out to our sponsor, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y. Run on over to solaray.com, learn all about her life stages. You're gonna love it. All I can say is, everyone, this has been such a wonderful show. Run on over to iTunes right now, rate and review this terrific episode, because I want to hear your feedback. This has been another Amazing Her podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peak, your host, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our Her podcast community. Speaking of connection and community and tribes, pop on over to drpeak.com to learn more about my work and social media. And join me every single week for another Her podcast, where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Dr. Corey Keeves as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. Thanks so much. And remember that your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there and carpe diem. Have a great one.